drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Every 2 years, the Ballarat International Photo Biennale curates some of the best photographic work in the world. But now the festival is taking a more permanent approach, opening the National Centre for Photography in Ballarat. And they're kicking things off with a sculptural exhibition. Aaron Bradbrook is the associate curator at the Biennale, and Robbie Rowlands is the artist creating the inaugural exhibition, which is called Incremental Loss. And guess what? They're both my guests in the drawing room. Welcome.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
All right, obvious first question, Aaron. This is a centre dedicated to photography. So why are you starting off with a sculptural innovation?
Yep, excellent question. So the Biennale is embarking on something new. So everybody knows us because we are a Biennale. We happen every 2 years. We're moving into the gallery space. So we've acquired through three incredible benefactors, a beautiful old 1857 former Union Bank. And when the 60s or 70s came into this building, it came in hard. So the bank is flooded with false ceilings, which cover up all the gorgeous ceiling roses and all these amazing intricate details that were existent in the original architecture. And there's all these false rooms because it was turned into, well, partition rooms because it was turned into an accounting firm at some point. And we, as an organisation, decide to make a bold statement because we want to put the National Centre for Photography on the map. So, and we wanted to push, as a Biennale, as a festival, we pushed the conventions of photography. There was not a better artist that we thought practicing today in Melbourne, in Australia, who could better take on this mission that we had created. And Robbie's an incredible interdisciplinary artist who works with photography and sculpture. So we commissioned Robbie to enter the space to create a major new exhibition, which you're 100% correct, it is very sculptural. But the way Robbie works, you know, is very akin to how his sculptural works are viewed and visualized. And the interesting thing with Robbie is what he will talk about, I'm sure, is that his works have an ephemeral nature. So he works in sites that are destined for demolition and sites that are destined for renovation. So the sculptural works themselves have a lifespan of, you know, sometimes a few days, in the case of us, for 2 weeks. So they're delicately documented photographically, and that becomes pretty much the only way that the majority of people get to witness his works is photographically. So we just thought, what a bold statement to make, to engage people, get them talking about photography, get them talking about sculpture and thinking about how those links exist, because the photographic works themselves will be presented in a major show during the Biennale. But the state of Robbie's works, he works with transition, and the centre itself is becoming the National Centre for Photography. As it stands now, it's a bank.
So tell me, Robbie, tell me about your practice. I mean, we got a bit of an insight there from Aaron, but you often work with condemned buildings or objects that are past their working life, right? Talk me through what you've done before.
Well, I spent the last 20 years sort of exploring the landscape, looking for forgotten spaces or materials that I can work with, and trying to explore them for the relationships that we have with them. They're usually modest materials, things that aren't of heritage value, sites, buildings that have, you know, they're not heritage listed, so they're going to be demolished or they're just left in disrepair. So there's this wonderful kind of playful, for me, engagement with the landscape, which, you know, it was kind of a real freeing moment in my practice where I realised if I wanted to do a work or have a show, I could do it anytime, anywhere, instead of sort of relying on the main system of galleries and shows. And so I kind of find these spaces, some get offered to me, some I just trip across. And, you know, if it's a site I'm working with, I move in, I, in a sense, occupy it in an artistic way, be part of it and explore it for all its many wonders, and look for creative outcomes using specifically the material from the site, not introducing any other material other than ways of working and ideas, and obviously saws. saws are big on me. People think I use a chainsaw. I actually don't use a chainsaw, but I like that I give that impression.
You also have a beard. It's very,
yeah,
very chilling.
Beard and track chainsaw.
Wow, what a look. Yeah. Seriously, this is visual, guys. Google a
I'm
picture.
I'm going to have to take some photos of a chainsaw and beard moment in the space.
Make a calendar.
So this site is a location being renewed. Does that change your approach, the mood of the space?
Well, I've been in a few sites that have, you know, they have that have heritage overlays or aspects that are limitations. And I love limitations because I tell you what, otherwise, as an artist, the sky's the limit. And so the limitations are really wonderful for sort of saying, okay, there's a no-go zone, so work in between here and there. And so one of those sites people may or may not remember was Flinders Street Station, the abandoned gymnasium upstairs there. There were a lot of limitations to that, but still managed to make a work and a situation for that within those limitations. But this one... Yeah, this one has limitations, but it's amazing. Like, I seriously could be there for another year. I know they don't want me there for another year, but it's just incredible what I've been able to discover in that space, the subtleties and these wonderful moments of revealing small and large moments in the space. It's incredibly poetic.
And you said you do a lot of cutting, although not with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Are you tearing down the false ceilings and the walls that Aaron mentioned? Was that just way to get a demolition crew and artist is good for that?
It did actually open up some better ways to see what they need to do in the future, which I think is quite hard-hitting because it really does do... Part of the intention is to open up the space to allow transparency and access and for anyone. And the reality is in doing that, you start to see what's behind the walls and the ceiling and you start to go, oh, really? Is that it? Okay, we're going to have to deal with that. So that's part of it. But look, there's been this wonderful veneer. I think the veneer is quite wonderful, really. It's you know, most people look at it and just think, oh, my God, that's just got to go. But it has been wonderful working with some beautiful old 60s veneer. And one of the moments was this small room that had this beautiful veneer shelving unit, which I cut through and revealed a 1960s enamel stove, which was... totally unknown to everyone, including possibly the heritage committees. So the discoveries are amazing. Yeah, absolutely. And a ceiling rose. I carved through a ceiling and revealed a ceiling rose above it, a beautiful large ceiling rose.
So I'm always curious with artists who take on these sorts of projects, intentionally temporary works. Mm. How does this become a sustainable practice? It may be artistically rewarding, and clearly it is for you, but surely it's hard to sell something that no longer exists, that only exists for a period of time. Like, that would actually do my head in.
Well, yeah, you've pretty much summed up 20 years of my life.
Do your head in bit?
Yeah, I've chose a pretty difficult path as an artist, but, you know, look, well, most arts practices are difficult, even if you're selling to commercial dealers and so forth. It's a pretty hard run, and you know, I run a family, three kids and the whole lot, so it's a, you know, I've taken a pretty crazy path for sustainability of a life with a family as an artist, but I'm primarily a site responsive, site specific artist, so I can respond to the circumstance I'm in. So I can certainly respond when there's a whole lot of money. I can tell you that, but I have formed a practice that allows real diverse ways of approaching situations, sites and communities, and that actually has been incredibly beneficial to how I run my practice, because I've been involved in a lot of council-based work and government-based work where my practice is involved in various communities, from really incredibly deep regional communities. And these are projects that have quite good funding associated with them and wonderful public outcomes and, you know, fantastic sort of alternate ways to deal with what primarily is an undercurrent issue in its mental health. And that you'll find a lot of artists sort of fall into that area, because arts is a really wonderful way to sort of engage the community in a softer way with issues that are not broached in the everyday kind of conversations. So, yes, I can amazingly survive. It's taken a long time. I do, yes, all my work gets primarily destroyed, but not No, I won't say all. I'm doing a major commission for Broadmeadows Council, and that's a permanent work. A temporary work for Townsville I finished a year or so back. That was bought and now is going to be a permanent work. The beauty with sculpture is, look, the reality is when I do major sculptural works, they actually can be permanent. There's so much effort gone into making them hold up. You know, so if there is a decision to hold on to something, you know, we talk about that. But I'm quite fine with loss in my practice. I've called my show incremental loss. Maybe that just sums up my 20 years in practice.
I think you're doing all right. On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis. Aaron Bradbrook and Robbie Rowlands are my guests in the drawing room. We're obviously talking about art. Talking about photography, art. Sort of. Oh, you said something interesting there, Robbie.
Yeah.
Communities. How does community factor into art and public art? Because we often see art as something that a community looks at, but do you see the community as part of the actual creation?
Oh, absolutely. I can only work off examples, but I just did a project in Broken Hill, and that was pretty much, it was a residency. Here's a body of, you know, time and some money to just find something to do in the landscape and find ways to genuinely engage in the community. And I ended up finally working with Machine Preservation Society up there, and this wonderful group of people who were so interested in what I was doing. And so a show was built around being with them every day and being in their environment and creating work specific to that site. And so it was a really, you know, that's, I suppose, the thing. I can't predict really how things are going to run with the community, but I think most communities are really interested in arts practice and how artists actually make and work. I think it's quite an unknown area, and I think they're quite surprised that artists are actually kind of, you know, everyday people who are doing things in a way that when you get down to it, it's actually quite an everyday conversation that happens in the landscape. It's quite amazing how it taps into, you know, what's going on in each situation.
So we were speaking about communities, obviously, there. But,
yeah.
Aaron, most of Australia's major art institutions are in the capital cities. Is it sustainable to build an art centre away from those? And how does the community around a gallery shape that space?
So Ballarat at the moment is undergoing a massive new creative strategy where the city itself is envisioning a strategy forward to turn Ballarat into, you know, a regional arts destination. So we're intricately linked to that strategy. And, you know, like you said, we are a regional city, but we're a regional city on the cusp of the fringe of Melbourne. You know, we are 1 hour and a bit on the train. We're 100 k's away. You know, it is so accessible to come to Ballarat. And the reality is, you know, that the Melbourne market is driving people into these regional cities. You know, people just, you know, as on an economic standpoint, want to buy a house in Ballarat. They want to buy the land that they can afford, that they have always dreamed about buying. And so people are moving into Ballarat in droves. So we are, you know, Ballarat's becoming in quite a significant, you know, regional centre in the arts. So we're getting in early, you know, and we have a long history of the Biennale. It's been going for 13 years. 2017, you know, 30,000 people came to the festival in 30 days. You know, 20,000 of those were from Melbourne. And 1% of those population were from international. So the accessibility to the town isn't hard. So, you know, and the things are only getting more convenient. So that's where we're getting in, you know, and we're, you know, and it's so important for arts institutions, like you said, are based in those cities. But a lot of the arts institutions are, you know, they're still renting. They're outside of the market, you know, except for those really dominant permanent ones like the NGV, ACME, you know, those sorts of major institutions where they have access to the land and where they're not moving anywhere. A lot of the smaller contemporary arts museums or galleries are being moved around subject to rent. So we had to make a decision to get into the market and build a sustainable venue. You know, we're not at the mercy of rentiers. We are the owner. We can do, you know, what we like. We're a public institution.
So does it give you more creative license as a result if, you know, you don't have to worry about those other things quite as much?
Absolutely it does. Yeah, absolutely it does. And we can, you know, we can start having conversations now with artists to make work responsively, which we'll present in 3 years' time, because we know we'll be here in 3 years' time. You know, they're major decisions that a lot of galleries don't have the luxury of doing. You know, they can't, you know, have these ideas and broach these artists in these long, drawn-out exhibitions and research periods. You know, and that's where the luxury of doing that. So, you know, so we're moving into a major new chapter of the Biennale, you know, becoming a permanent bricks and mortar, you know, space. The Biennale will still exist. The Biennale is growing in scale. It's moving to 60 days this year as opposed to 30 based on industry demand, and, you know, based on the caliber of the artists that we're bringing over to the country, bringing over to Ballarat. You know, we're bringing significant amount of gallery museum directors and curators along with them. So we're, you know, we're really putting a lot of effort into building the Biennale, into building the centre. So, you know, they sort of go hand in hand.
So what should we expect next from the centre? I mean, is it purely photographic work after this, or more sculpture ahead? Will you work across those disciplines? Or
breaking the rules.
I'm clearly obsessed with breaking the rules.
Well, exactly. you know, we will. You know, it is a centre dedicated to photography. So photography is the practice, but photography is changing. You know, we live in a contemporary society. We live in a progressive society with new technology. You know, so some people refer. Photography has become under, you know, like a lens-based art. So photography still encompasses film. It encompasses digital media. You know, there's lots of different avenues. And there's also avenues, you know, where photography's relationship to other artistic practices are coming to question. So, you know, is there a sculptural element indicative of the reading of the photograph? You know, so then all of a sudden you have a photograph which may be on a wall. The photograph may be installed in a sculptural type way. You know, there's so many avenues where photography can go and is going. So, you know, the idea of it being, I mean, we've made a bold decision to make it exclusively photography, you know, in a world where it is all, you know, being encompassed and you know, mixed arts is becoming, I think, you know, the NGV started to lose some of their singular rooms that just dictated particular art forms, and it's all becoming integrated. And, you know, photography can move in that space as well, but we believe it's still important to have a museum that's in a gallery that's discussing photography, you know, and discussing the conventions of photography and not letting photography get swallowed up. You know, photography tried for so long to be in the same conversation, and then it, you know, it's starting to be in the same conversation, but then all of a sudden we're finding it's being swallowed up in that conversation. It's, you know, it's not having its dominance. You know, some like painting still has, you know, in the hierarchy still is right up there. So we find it incredibly important to maintain those links with photography and just keep driving and moving and, you know, unveiling what photography can be as we move forward into the 21st century and beyond. So that's...
I like it. I like it a lot, and I'm glad you're doing it. Hey, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no worries.
Thank you.
It's been great.
Robbie Rowlands and Aaron Bradbrook have been my guests in the drawing room, and Robbie's exhibition, Incremental Loss, opens this Saturday at the National Centre for Photography in Ballarat, which is in Victoria.